Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. You're the Cure, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on the show once again. If you have any questions along the way, comments, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800 along the way. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
Good to see you on this Monday.
Great to see you, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the week. And then, of course, next Monday we'll be gone because it's Memorial Day weekend coming up. But here we are with another great show, and we have a special guest on the phone.
We do. I'm so excited today to have one of my mentors, and I consider a great friend, Dr. Lee Cowden, MD, MD homeopathy also. Dr. Cowden graduated from the University of Texas Medical School in Houston, my alma mater also. He was a few years ahead of me. And then he graduated internal medicine residency from St. Louis University Hospital, and then he did a fellowship in cardiology and critical care medicine. But more importantly, I would say he's been the president of the Academy of Comprehensive Integrative Medicine for a number of years, and he's chairman of that scientific advisory board of the Academy. Dr. Cowden practices board-certified cardiologist and internist for years, but transitioned into integrative medicine a number of years ago. He's internationally known for his knowledge and skills in practicing and teaching integrative medicine, and he has co-authored many books and articles on integrative medicine. And he's pioneered successful treatments of cancer and autism, Lyme disease, and many other illnesses. So Dr. Cowden is a wealth of knowledge, but also of compassion and love of all the integrative doctors who've taught me anything. I would say Dr. Cowden has taught me the most breadth and depth of knowledge, but also of compassion and love, and his Christ-centered approach to living and teaching is awesome. And so we're extremely happy and excited to have Dr. Lee Cowden with us today to give his perspective on life and medicine, but COVID-19 obviously in particular is in the news and what we'll focus on today. But Dr. Cowden, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, Ben. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we're super excited to have a man of such expertise and experience. And what I've explained to folks who are not familiar with integrative medicine is that conventional medical school, like the University of Texas at Houston, where you and I graduated from, they teach us certain things. So we have tools in our toolbox that include pharmaceutical medicines and surgery, and that's about it. And the integrative medicines have more, or practitioners have more tools in their toolbox. I had a colleague of mine, he's a family practitioner from Iowa. He went to undergrad with me at Baylor, and then he did residency with me in Waco. But he's a practicing conventional family practitioner in Iowa. He's a little frustrated with the system that he's in, as many doctors are that call me. And what I tried to explain to him about integrative medicine, because he's curious, it's just more tools in the toolbox. So anyways, we want to talk about some of those tools in the toolbox. But before we get into that, I kind of want to allow you to just give your thoughts on the current situation in our country, the past couple months with this COVID-19 issue and the lockdown and quarantine and just the whole scenario. We've seen pandemics in the past, even coronavirus pandemics in the past. This one's been different and unique in a lot of ways. So wanted to get your perspective on that. Wade, did we have a question?
Oh, yeah, we had a text real quick, and it's kind of off this. Maybe either one of you, opinion on, I want to say that I pronounce this Ultherapy. I'm going to have that done to reduce appearance of wrinkles on my neck and chest.
Well, how do you spell that?
Ultherapy, all one word. Have you ever heard of that?
I'm not familiar with that therapy, so if they could maybe send in the full name, we might get to that towards the end of the show.
Okay.
So, sorry, Dr. Cowden, we have people text or call in throughout
the show. Yeah,
they'll
text in random stuff.
And we try to answer them, even if they're not related. But back to the question, just your thoughts and perspective, anything you'd like to share on your thoughts on the current situation in the country?
Yes. Well, first of all, my heart bleeds for those that have lost loved ones, and you know, tragic. But I think that the way that the whole thing has been managed is probably not ideal. You know, we know that that if you sequester people, then you don't get what's called the herd immunity. And the herd immunity is people that have good immune systems developing immunity against the virus, and therefore getting to the point where they're not able to be a transmitter of the disease to other people. And in my opinion, probably the way it should have been handled is that the people that are that have weakened immune systems that are very vulnerable, like people in nursing homes and so on, should have sequestered and stayed away from the population until the herd immunity was built up. But the rest of the people should have been out there working and you know, getting the virus and overcoming the virus and developing immunity and so on. And I think if we had done that, this whole thing would be completely over by now. But, you know, we have people that are making decisions, unfortunately, in large part by because of politics, not because of what's best for the health of the people. You know, we have, you know, a fairly significant mortality rate from the illness because it's not being treated correctly. And in my opinion, if the doctors in the country would follow the lead of the COVID-19 Integrative Consortium, they would have figured out that you could drop the mortality rate to a tiny fraction of what it has been in a very short period of time. This group of doctors has been doing only three things for the patients that come into the hospital with advanced symptoms of COVID. They give them intravenous vitamin C, they give them corticosteroids, and they give them anticoagulants. A lot of the patients that are dying because of clot formation. And so if you give them anticoagulants, you prevent that cause of the death. The vitamin C and the corticosteroids helps to re-regulate the immune system because a lot of people that are dying are dying from what we call cytokine storm. Their immune system gets overactive, and they die from their own immune system killing them. But the doctors that have used this combination of three things have an extremely, extremely low rate of mortality if those therapies are given in the first 6 hours of hospitalization. If you wait beyond 12 hours of the hospitalization, then the mortality rate goes up again. So it'd be good for all your listeners to become aware of this therapy and insist upon it if they or one of their loved ones ends up with COVID.
And these are physicians here in the States doing this?
Oh, yeah. There's a doctor in Houston who's part of this COVID group, and he's spoken out on the TV station down there and is having great success, great results, and would be, I think, willing to communicate with other doctors in the state about this therapeutic approach. But it's not complicated. And what's beautiful is that the bulk of the program was published by Dr. Marik, Paul Marik, M-A-R-I-K, in the CHEST Journal in 2017 for the treatment of sepsis. And in that research that he published, they dropped the mortality rate from 40% down to 8.5% just by giving corticosteroids, vitamin C intravenously, and vitamin B1 intravenously. The B1 is not a bad thing to do, even with a COVID patient, but it's not absolutely essential. But the vitamin C is, in my opinion, absolutely essential.
And I want to go back and touch on one thing you said to reinforce so the listeners really caught this, that these folks in the ICU or in the hospital, the ones that are really that are suffering from significant symptoms, it's not the actual virus itself that's causing, that's creating these symptoms or killing someone. It's the immune system's response to it, and it's this overactive and kind of imbalanced, out of balanced immune response that's causing all the symptoms and causing the actual death of patients. So that brings us to the thought that COVID-19 or really any virus doesn't actually kill people. You've got to have other factors. There's other factors involved. It's COVID-19 plus X, Y, and Z. It's got to be this perfect storm of multiple things together. So, and that's why we're seeing the vast majority of people who acquire COVID-19 have zero symptoms. I think I quoted last week on our show, 95% of people that had polio didn't have any symptoms either. These other factors that are involved. So maybe you could touch on some of those things. And it kind of relates to the herd immunity. We should all be out there hugging and shaking hands and interacting and working because most of us are balanced in a way that we won't have symptoms from this virus that would get in us.
Yeah. And if you happen to be out there trying to develop the herd immunity and you do get sick, if you do have to go to the hospital, demand that they immediately start intravenous vitamin C, corticosteroids, and anticoagulants so that you don't become a statistic.
And if they refuse to do that?
You can actually force them to do that because World Medical Association had a Helsinki accord, which was signed by physician representatives of the United States. And paragraph number 37 of that accord says if there's not an effective therapy for a treatment of a patient in a hospital, then the doctor's requirement is to search other therapies that are outside the standard of care and to explain those therapies to the patient. And if the patient wants those, to give the patient those therapies, whether it's on the hospital pharmaceutical list or not. And so this is an international mandate, an international agreement. And so the patients can actually use that agreement to force their doctor in the hospital to do the treatment that's necessary.
Right. And you mentioned standard of care, and I just want to remind listeners, standard of care basically is established by these various committees or advisory boards, and unfortunately I think some influenced by or coming from a background of only pharmaceutical-based medicine, not an integrative approach, and potentially influenced by those biases. So standard of care, for instance, Dr. Brownstein in Michigan, David Brownstein, I think a lot of my listeners are familiar with him. Dr. Rowan, Robert Rowan in California, we've had on the show before. They both received letters from the Federal Trade Commission asking them basically cease and desist. I think they call it advertising and marketing of any of these therapies like ozone and even vitamin C and things that aren't standard of care because they haven't been approved or haven't been supported by rigorous scientific evidence, I think, is what the FTC letter said. But basically, I interpret that as the FDA has not approved some of these therapies. And so if a natural product has not gone through the FDA process of approval as a treatment for a particular condition, then you can't say it's a treatment for that condition. You have to be approved by the FDA to be able to claim or advertise or talk about something as a specific treatment. And that kind of falls in line with the standard of care. But what you're saying is, based off this Helsinki-type accord, there is a method and a legal way, not only legal, but it's required to go outside the standard of care definition.
That's correct.
And it also reminds me of what I think it was you that taught me this or reminded me of this one day. You said, Ben, go back and look at Sackett's original definition of evidence-based medicine. And there were three parts to that. There was peer-reviewed, research evidence out of medical journals. But then also you have to consider clinical experience of the physician. And then thirdly, you also have to consider the patient's wishes or their belief system. And the patient's wishes and belief system trump the doctor's clinical experience, and the that's okay. And the clinical experience trumps the evidence. I don't know of any practicing conventional physician who remembers that or understands that or thinks about that very much. Do you have any thoughts on that?
We need to have the appropriate hierarchy of decision making, and the lowest on the on the totem pole is the the published peer-reviewed literature, and the patient, the practitioner's experience trumps that, because the literature is based on the population, but the clinician's experience is based on that particular patient sitting in front of the practitioner at that moment.
Right.
So it's an individualized approach.
Right.
And if you're a Jehovah's Witness and you go into the hospital emergency room bleeding rectally with a hemoglobin of 5, the literature would say you must have a transfusion. The emergency room physician's clinical experience would say you must have a transfusion, but the patient says, no, I'm not going to have a transfusion, and the patient wins, basically.
Right. Well, and I think people need to remember that. It seems like we've lost a lot of, or attempts at losing some of our freedoms and liberties, and we forget that we're in charge of our bodies and our medical decisions. It's easy to...
Yeah, that's especially important as it relates to a vaccine.
Right.
Because, the vaccines have not been sufficiently studied to know whether they are safe or not safe. And especially the ones that they're developing right now for the for the COVID, everybody that receives that is going to be a guinea pig, and I don't choose to be a guinea pig. So.
Yeah, same here. And I want to remind folks, I think we've talked about it before, but on the show, that they've attempted coronavirus vaccines in the past, and it didn't go well. Coronavirus is apparently a very difficult virus subspecies to make a proper vaccine for, and I think it was ferrets in this particular animal model that was studied. This was after the SARS epidemic, and all those ferrets died because the antibody response was a binding antibody instead of a neutralizing antibody, and it caused an overwhelming response when the ferrets were reintroduced to the wild type of coronavirus. It created this massive out-of-balance immune response, and they died. So you have to be very careful with trying to micromanage and manipulate and tinker with God's design and with that immune system and immune response.
Yeah. And it's not that I'm against trying to protect people against illness by some means, because I'm not. We've had homeoprophylaxis with us for over 200 years with amazing results. The typical degree of reduction of illness in a patient population who's received homeoprophylaxis, homeopathic treatment against the development of that illness, is 92% to 94%, and that's extremely effective for prevention against illness, probably more effective than most of the vaccines. So, in integrated medicine, we would recommend homeoprophylaxis rather than vaccine.
And can you explain that a little more to listeners who are not familiar with homeopathy and homeoprophylaxis? Can you explain exactly what that is?
Yes. Homeopathy was developed by Dr. Hahnemann back in the late 1700s in Europe. And it was used to treat patients, prevent illness in patients with smallpox, with typhoid, with a lot of other severe illnesses, as well as prevent the illness, as well as treat the illness once it occurred. And homeopathy appears to work on a quantum physical basis. It doesn't work on a chemical basis. If you do homeoprophylaxis in a patient and measure the antibodies in their body against that particular microbe that you're trying to prevent, the antibody levels won't be different than the control population. But when you expose the patient to that microbe, their T memory cells rev up quickly and start producing an immune attack against that microbe in the body. So right now, as far as I know, there are no tests in the United States that measure the T memory cell function. But if there were, you could use that test to prove that the homeoprophylaxis was going to be effective in a particular individual.
Right. And so...
So it's basically the original substance diluted in water many, many times, so that in most cases, when it gets beyond the 24th dilution of 1 to 10, that there's not a single molecule of original substance still in the water. But Dr. Cyril Smith has spent the last 45 years of his life researching water, not the pollution in water, but the quantum physics of water, and has shown, you know, that water can retain its energetic memory for centuries. You know, the proof of that is Dr. Hahnemann made some remedies in the late 1700s that are still effective today if administered to a patient.
Wow. And I recall there was a Cuban study, I think in 2010. I'll look this up real quick as we're talking. But as I recall, it was a Cuban drug company that was making conventional vaccines decided to experiment with a homeopathic one of these dilutions for leptospirosis, which is a common infection in Cuba. And the year that they did this, they treated 2.3 million Cubans that year, and Cuba experienced one of the lowest rates of lepto in the history of the disease. And there may be more. I just remember that one in Cuba because they didn't have great access to lots of other therapies.
Yeah. In Brazil in the 1970s, there was an outbreak of meningococcal meningitis. They didn't have a vaccine for it. So the homeopaths down there gave the homeoprophylaxis to 18,000 people, and it reduced the incidence of meningococcal meningitis in that group of patients by 96% compared to the control population who did not get the homeoprophylaxis. And then in the 1990s, they had another outbreak of meningococcal meningitis, and this time the homeopaths gave the treatment to 65,000 patients and reduced the incidence of meningococcal meningitis in that population by 92% compared to the controls who did not get the homeoprophylaxis. So this is way beyond what we call a placebo effect.
Right.
Yeah, allopathic medicine wants to say that homeopathy works only by a placebo effect, which is absolutely not true.
Yeah. Well, and I was doing some reading earlier in the month and came across an article, the 1918 pandemic, the flu pandemic, New York City, of course, survived, but they had less of a death toll, less of an impact than other big cities. And this article pointed out that Dr. Royal S. Copeland, who was the New York City Health Commissioner at the time, he was a homeopathic physician. And there was homeopathic, at least one homeopathic hospital in New York City in 1918. And so the assumption or theory was that perhaps it was the use of homeopathy in New York City that allowed the pandemic to pass through there without as significant of an impact. I don't know that. I just came across that article.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were in charge, if you were advising President Trump, or, well, we're about at time for a break. That could be a big question. So when we come back from the break, we'll ask Dr. Cowden if he were in the role of advising the president, you know, both from a treatment of maybe like he's already talked about in the hospital, but more on the prevention side too. And I don't know that we need to get into policy as far as quarantine. If you'd like, we can, but we'll ask some of those questions when we come back. So y'all stick with us. We are talking to Dr. Lee Cowden, president of the Academy of Comprehensive Integrative Medicine, a mentor of mine and a friend, and a great man. So thank you again, Dr. Cowden, for being with us. Stick with us. We will be right back. This is Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. Check out the website, VeritasMedical.com, past archived programs. You can find them all there, as well as other important information, VeritasMedical.com. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on the show, was special guest this morning.
Yes, we've got Dr. Lee Cowden with us, president of the Academy Conference of Integrative Medicine, and enjoying his expertise on this matter of COVID-19. And I forgot to say at the top of the show, I meant to dedicate this show to all the kids out there. You know, I've got 6 kids, and you know, they don't know much, or they're definitely not nervous, scared, or worried, or anxious about any of this at all. We're living life as normal, as as normal as you can, I guess. But so they're pretty much unaffected by this, except they'll have friends that can't come over, or if they come over, they won't get out of the car because their parents are scared. Birthday party invitations, we got one yesterday. You know, please drive by our kid's house and wave for the birthday party.
Oh, my.
And all these kids that, you know, graduation time is right now or should be, you know, proms, just all of this stuff. You know, the athletes who didn't get to participate in track and golf and baseball and all the spring sports. So, and I'm, you know, think of these little kids. You know, I've got a 2.5-year-old and I've got a 7-year-old, and I just can't imagine you know, in other households that are succumbing to the spirit of fear, and their kids being raised in this environment of mask and can't touch or hold hands or hug or interact with their grandparents or friends, go through your birthdays with no, all of this. These kids are going to have nightmares about people wearing masks probably, and learn to be scared of other people, scared of their environment, scared of germs, just fear and scared and worried and just fear and anxiety. It's really, really sad. So kids out there, if you're listening, parents of kids, get them to listen. There is nothing to fear. The germ cannot kill you. The virus cannot kill you. And what you need to be focused on is your terrain. And in fact, I read a study. This was Carnegie Mellon put this out. And this was a study about reverse social distancing, I'll call it. It was about social interaction, and in particular, hugs. And it showed if you got 7 hugs a day or more, you were more immune, more resistant to the flu and flu-like viruses. You would have less symptoms, and if you got symptoms of flu, they'd be less severe from hugs. And they, in this study, they neutralize for all other factors like smoking and obesity and everything else. We need each other. We're a species. God created us to be in community and to need the human touch and love. So kids, y'all don't need to be scared or fearful about anything. And we are doing this show to try to teach and encourage parents and everyone out there that they don't need to walk in fear, and fear actually makes you more susceptible to disease. So I wanted to throw that in there. I meant to do that at the top, dedicate this to all the kids and their drive-by birthday parties, and encourage parents to get more educated in the truth, increase the tools in their toolbox, and understand you can walk through this world healthy and happily without being scared of your fellow human being or scared of germs. So Dr. Cowden, do you have any comments in that regard?
I agree completely with you that that fear actually weakens the immune system and makes you more susceptible to illness. And when you can overcome fear, and the opposite of fear, by the way, is love. And so an expression of love is, you know, hugs and touch. And so powers to be are trying to get us to not touch or hug, so that the mandate actually increases the probability of illness. And I think that it's the wrong way to go.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned at the first half of the show on the vitamin C, and then the corticosteroid and the anticoagulant in the hospital setting. But if you were coming up with an overarching health policy to try to help in this type of situation, share with the listeners some of the things you would be focused on.
Yes, I think that if I were, you know, advising the president, I'd say the president to let the doctors have freedom to do the treatments that are necessary, irrespective of what the hospital policy says. And, you know, he can make that a presidential order if he wants to. And, you know, if the doctors will, you know, reach out to the doctors that are already using this simple treatment program and understand how to do it and implement that for their patients in the first 6 hours after hospitalization, the death rate from COVID would plummet. It's not that high already. It's 0.12, I think. Death rate, but it would go to, I think, a tenth of that or a hundredth of that easily, just by that simple implementation in the first 6 hours of hospitalization. And, you know, the doctors are oftentimes operating out of fear also. Their fear of getting kicked off the hospital staff, fear of losing their lives, and fear of having to go up against the medical board, blah, blah, blah. So the fear is operating on multiple levels in this country right now, within the medical establishment as well as within the population. And the spirit of fear is strong, but the spirit of God is stronger.
Amen.
So if we look to God for our answers and start relying on God for our answers instead of man, then I think we'll have good outcomes. But if we continue to look to man and their natural solution, I think we'll have a worse outcome.
Amen. I agree 100%. Well, can you speak to some of the preventative or terrain building measures? They seem so basic potentially, but you know, like I said, the vast majority of people don't have symptoms that get exposed to COVID-19, especially kids. I mean, it's practically not even touching kids. I looked at one study out of New York, and it was just a sampling. I think they sampled like 1,300 kiddos. And out of the whole 1,300, only three had to be hospitalized. All three of those kids had significant, either some sort of birth defect or congenital disorder, some pre-existing condition, significant pre-existing condition. The three kids that ended up in the ICU, one of which passed away, unfortunately. But the point being that kids are pretty much not being affected by this condition. But what are some of the things that you would advise kids and adults from a more of a preventative or immune boosting terrain building mindset?
Well, I think the very first step would be to drink more water, not tap water, but purified water. And the best way to drink water for an adult would be 2 ounces every 15 minutes, every waking hour. And that hydrates tissues and flushes stuff out of the body that otherwise would create problems. The next is to stop eating fast food. They call it fast food because it speeds you to your grave. And so start eating whole, live foods, whole fruits, whole vegetables, and so on. And not so much of that cooked, processed stuff. And the third would be getting enough rest, going to bed ideally when the sun goes down, but definitely no later than about 9 o'clock, because we know that from Chinese medicine that the endocrine system detoxifies itself and regenerates itself between 9 p.m. and 11 p.m., if and only if you're in bed asleep in a pitch-dark black room with not too much EMF. The other thing that I would urge people to do is to get rid of as much EMF in their environment as they possibly can. The electromagnetic pollution from Wi-Fi, from cordless phones, from electric smart meters, from burglar alarm systems, and so on, are having a terrible effect on the body and on the immune system and on the endocrine system and on the nervous system. And that's not that difficult to get rid of a bunch of that stuff. Now, if you live in an apartment, you may have more trouble because, you have to contend with the Wi-Fi and the burglar alarm systems from the neighbors. But if you live in a house a good distance away from a neighbor, then, just by turning off your own Wi-Fi and converting to a wired burglar alarm system instead of a radio frequency burglar alarm system, you can protect yourself quite a bit. Get rid of the cordless phone. You don't need a cordless phone. Use your cell phone if you need to have ability to speak from different places in the house or out in the yard. But turn the cell phone off, turn it into airplane mode, and then turn it off, except when you're calling out, so you're not zapping yourself all the time with a cell phone close by. So there's simple things that you can do that can make a huge difference in your immune system. When you're being zapped, for example, all night long from electromagnetic, then that stimulates the adrenal gland to pump out adrenaline and cortisol. cortisol weakens the immune system, adrenaline causes constriction of the blood vessels that go to the primary organs. And as a result of the organs not getting sufficient blood supply, they go into anaerobic metabolism and start forming lactic acid. And lactic acid shifts the balance of the tissues in a negative way, so it's more susceptible to disease, and you're less capable of detoxifying. So it'd be important to get rid of as much EMF as you can, especially during the night.
What about, you had mentioned in an earlier conversation I had with you, that there wasn't a whole lot from when you graduated medical school that still applies today, but there was one particular thing. It had to do with virulence of these pathogens. Yeah. Can you go through that for the listeners?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the chief of microbiology at the medical school said that illness equals the number of microbes that get into the body times the virulence of those microbes divided by the host resistance. And, you know, the host resistance is a complex formula. You know, it has to do with total body toxic load, you know, from pesticides, herbicides, heavy metals, radioactive elements, and so on, as well as electromagnetic pollution, and then also how much sleep or rest you get, because your immune system recovers during the night, if and only if you're deeply asleep. And, you know, you can't change the virulence of the microbe, that's a given. The number of microbes you can change, but not necessarily by social distancing. The better way to reduce the microbial load is by, you know, getting some, let's say some hydrogen peroxide and putting in a spray bottle. And anytime you're out and about for a bit, the moment you get back to your spray bottle, you spray that into the mouth as you're breathing in, six pumps, and so that you're breathing hydrogen peroxide into the upper airways, which then kills off the microbes that have stuck to the mucosa before they can enter through the mucosa into the tissues to start setting up infection. So it's lowering the load.
So on I want to go through that formula again. Disease equals on the numerator you have virulence. So that's how aggressive a microbe is, how powerful it is to create infectious symptoms. So virulence plus the number of microbes, that's in the numerator.
Times the number of microbes.
So that's numerator. Denominator is
the host resistance,
the resiliency. That's all the terrain we talk about. And so there's not a
whole... Their immune system and the total body toxic load.
Right.
Primarily.
So that numerator, the virulence, we don't have control over the number of bugs. We have some amount of control. But overall, that numerator's not a whole lot of control. But that denominator, you have a lot of control over. And the more you increase that bottom number, I mean, just like any math problem, then that the number goes way, way down as far as the overall, when you divide it out. The ability of that bug to infect and cause disease, cause a problem, goes way down. And from a virulent standpoint, you had mentioned, it takes 10, I think you said 10 shigella to give you diarrhea?
Shigella. Yeah, 10 shigella will cause bloody diarrhea in a person with an average immunity. But it takes 1,000 salmonella to cause diarrhea in a person with average immunity. So that means that shigella is 100 times more virulent than salmonella.
Right. So different bugs have different, I'll call it power, different ability to make you sick. So the type of bug can impact, obviously, but overall it's that denominator. It's the ability of the host to defend itself by doing all these things that, that Dr. Kellen's talked about, and we talk about all the time from the standpoint of your diet and lifestyle. And for that matter, even with chronic disease, whether it's heart disease or cancer or autoimmune disease or anything else, when that denominator is taken care of and stewarded properly, nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace, our four pillars that we talk about at Veritas, everything Dr. Cowden's laid out, that's what the focus should be on. That's what's going to decrease the disease number, whether it's infectious disease or chronic disease. And that's really the take-home message. And that's why we're not fearful of these bugs or of chronic disease, because we have more power in us, because this body is so well designed by God. If we just steward it the right way, we have the power to overcome these things, or to not even know we have them. Not even, I mean, just be totally symptom free.
Yeah, I think that you do something regularly, preferably even every day, to lower your load in your body, to improve the environment in your body, to improve your immune system, that that you won't be susceptible to COVID or any other significant infectious illness.
Right.
But if you do the, I call it the standard American degenerative diet, the SAD diet, you're going to be putting in toxins every day. You're not going to be putting in nutrients that are necessary to build the body back up every day. And so at some point, you finally get so far down the slippery slope that you don't have enough immunity to combat whatever infectious agents you get exposed to.
Right.
So, you know, today is the best day to start on changing that denominator, you know, changing the immune system, changing the toxic load.
Right.
You know, think about doing an infrared sauna, doing, you know, start drinking water the right way. A lot of people drink coffee and tea and sodas all day and call that hydration, but it's not hydration. That's actually more toxifying than it is hydrating.
Well, and when it comes to the food, I was listening to Dr. Zach Bush this weekend on an interview, and he talked about the antibiotic load in the food, which, I mean, I knew about that. But he just drove it home with this new nugget I did not know, that these pig farms that mass-produce pork, and this is every mass-produced meat, cow, chicken, whatever. But in his neck of the woods, there's a lot of pig farms, and the feces of the pig is so, in these conventional, you know, mass-produced facilities, the pig feces is so full of antibiotic, it's considered a toxic waste product. They're not able to transport it across state lines. They're not able to dispose of it in any way besides just make a little lake lined with liner and put the poop in it, and it just sits there. These just cesspools of pig poop because of the antibiotic load that's in that. So we know that doctors in America give out way too much antibiotic with the prescription pad, but we can't forget it's in the food also, and it's that. And that's just antibiotics. That's not talking about the different chemicals and hormones either. I mean, glyphosate, which is Roundup, is in the rainwater and just in our food. But you're really disrupting the microbiome in your gut at that point. You're killing the good bugs in the gut. And it's the good bugs that infer a lot of this resiliency and a lot of this immune boosting is in the good bugs. So I just wanted to remind listeners of that, too. That's another reason to know your farmers and your ranchers, and buy real food and real meat and whole foods. Buy stuff that's chemical free, pesticide free, antibiotic free.
Yeah, buy range fed and range finished meat if you're going to eat meat, but eat a lot more vegetables than you eat meat. Vegetables on average have 1/5 the amount of toxin load as the meat. So you're a lot less toxic load in if the book of your diet is vegetable.
Right. Can you, in our closing minutes here, Dr. Cowden, one thing I really appreciate about you, out of many things I appreciate, but I always remember you came to my clinic one time years ago, and we saw a patient together, and I kind of went through my normal spiel for a couple hours with this patient and talking about all these different terrain building things and nutrition and talking about the gut flora and all these things. And at the end of that visit, you had one question for that patient, and it was related to emotions. It was related to unresolved emotions and grief and unforgiveness. And you told me later on the phone, I'll never forget it, I was walking through Target with my wife and kiddos. This was years ago. And you called to check on me and just asked how things were going. And I, at the time, told you things were going real well with patients. We were bug killing, meaning we were chasing the bugs like Candida and Lyme and EBV and some of these chronic bugs. And what you said that day was, well, that's great, Ben. You'll help a lot of people that way. But the big but, and it stopped. I stopped in my tracks, and you said, you can kill alligators all day long, but if you don't drain the swamp, the alligators come back. And the thing at the very root of people's disease typically is these unresolved emotional conflicts, because it changes the energetics of the cell. This is in the quantum level, changes the vibrational frequency and energetics of that cell. And that disrupts the cellular environment, the physical environment, the pH and the oxygen content, and all that. And that will attract these bugs and toxins. So toxins settle in these tissues. The bugs are attracted to the dirty tissues. But it always resonated with me, that unresolved emotional conflict, whether that be unforgiveness or anger or bitterness or whatever. So in the closing moments, especially in light of the COVID-19 and the fear, could you just maybe speak to that a little bit or give your input so that listeners really understand this isn't just about the diet and hydration and EMF, although all that's important, obviously, but really that emotional component being so important.
Yes, it is absolutely critically important. If you have physical maladies and you work on a physical level only, then it's going to take a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy, a lot of effort to finally have a significant change in symptoms. But if you'll go to the next hierarchy above that, which is the emotional level, and work on that level without doing anything at all on the physical level, you'll get improvement in the physical level with less time, less money, less energy, less effort. If the patient's willing to go all the way to the spiritual level and work on that level, then it's even less time, less money, less energy, less effort than the other two levels without having to do anything at all on the other two levels. But, each patient needs to work where they feel comfortable. If they don't feel comfortable working on the spiritual level, then work on the emotional level. They don't feel comfortable working on the spiritual or emotional, and they'll have to work on the physical, but it's going to take them a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy, a lot of effort.
Right.
So what I learned is that the unresolved emotions do cause trapping of toxins in the tissues that are related primarily to that emotion. The primary emotion of the liver and the gallbladder is anger, frustration. And there's a lot of people feeling that right now. And so it's a good idea to close your eyes, get away from people, first of all, and then for just a few minutes. And then when you're away from people, close your eyes, visualize faces of individuals that you're angry with or frustrated with, and shout at them as if they're there until there's nothing left to shout. And then once you finish shouting, then forgive them. Make a choice to forgive them and forgive them as deeply as you can. And then if you're a praying person also, then ask God to forgive you for having had the anger and frustration towards those people in the first place. If you do that process, shouting with a variety of different individuals, and then forgiving those same individuals in reverse order, and then asking God's forgiveness for the anger, you'll find that you improve your health infinitesimally compared to just working on the diet and supplemental nutrients and detox and stuff like that. And, it's a much better return on investment, if you will.
Right. Well, I can confirm after 8 years now of practicing more integratively, that's a very true statement. And folks that can forgive, and forgiveness is probably number one of all, they heal deeper and faster and better, and they stay healed. So I concur.
An entanglement of emotions. So along with the anger will be maybe fear, sadness, or guilt, or grief, or other emotions entangled. And once you release the anger, then it becomes easier to release the other entangled emotions.
Right. Well, great. I'm afraid we're about out of time, Dr. Cowden. It was an honor having you. Dr. Cowden's helped so many physicians around the world learn to put more tools in their toolbox, including, obviously, this emotional component. I know, Dr. Cowden, you've been the personal physician of Dr. Mercola, and, of course, Dr. Mercola touches hundreds of thousands of lives through his website, but all the practitioners around the world that you've helped to train and educate through the academy. You've touched so many lives, and I just want to say publicly here today, thank you on behalf of all those folks, and definitely on behalf of me and my practitioners, my staff, my patients. Thank you for all that you've done and are doing. Keep up the good work, and we'll continue to keep you in our prayers.
Yeah, well, I thank you for what you're doing and congratulate you for hanging in there. It's not always easy, but you know, the results are good, and I see a lot of your patients see the positive impact you've had on their lives, so keep doing it.
Well, thank you very much. That's Dr. Lee Cowden with us today. This is Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure. We will be back in 2 weeks. Next week is holiday. So thank you for joining us today, everybody. Go be well.